Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Have that dump button ready, because I honestly have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth.
Get ready for takeoff.
There is no way that I'm tapping out now.
You're listening to Unkillable.
If you didn't kill us last night, we are unkillable.
Hosted by Brandon Tierney.
What's happening, everybody? Episode number 19 of Unkillable. Hope everybody is doing well. Hopefully 2025 is off to a great start. So for tonight's pod, I want to take you on a little bit of a different journey. I'll touch on a little something with the coaching here, but I just want to tell you actually how I became a Jets fan and like how unlucky. I don't think many of you know this story. I know that you all know that I'm a Jets fan. I don't know if you know how I became one. So no, it's not the conventional route that my dad was some crazy Jets fan and passed it on, or that I don't have a brother, so it wasn't a sibling. I have a sister. She couldn't care less. When I was watching football, she was studying. So it's got nothing to do with that. None of my buddies on the street were Jet fans. It's quite simple. So it had to be around, it was definitely in the early 80s, 82-ish maybe. Yeah, right around the sack exchange. And I remember we had just gotten our basement done for the first time, right? And it's the house that I grew up in. And, you know, like it was just... hot oil or whatever, some furnace, I don't know, from like the 1950s that was the size of like a blimp. And that was pretty much it. And like a bunch of shit that my parents would just keep down their tools, whatever. So they finally fixed it up a little bit, like linoleum, very 1980s-ish. We had like, finally got a VCR and we had a bathroom down there. And I remember, boy, like it was yesterday. We were having Sunday dinner at my house, and you know, the meatballs and the pasta and like salad, the old school sodas like ginger ale and cream soda, all that stuff, right? Maybe a little orange soda, a little Brajol, whatever. We're getting ready to eat like we always do every Sunday. And I remember, since we now had a basement that was finished and a bathroom, my mom said, I was in the street playing, and my mom said, all right, go wash your hands. Come up. We're getting ready to eat. So I walk in the basement, the TV's on, and the Jets are playing, right? I don't even remember who they're playing. You know, I would watch, I was probably 8-ish, maybe 9. And I watched football with my dad, but my dad, unlike baseball, which at that point I was already playing probably for 2 years, I was already into basketball, and I play football in the street. But football is the one sport like my dad didn't have a defined team for. He would watch the Jets. He would watch the Giants. He would bet the Jets. He would bet the Giants. He would bet against the Jets. He would bet against the Giants. Like he bet, like he liked to watch, like not irresponsibly, but he liked to have a little action on the game. And as I pieced together some snippets of my childhood, I could actually remember him on the phone with this guy and he had a code name and give me this, if that, reverse this. All right. So as I'm going down to wash my hands, the Jets are playing. And they're still at Shea Stadium, so it's obviously before 84, which I think, 84 was their last game at Shea. 83. I think it was 83. And as I'm walking to go into the bathroom, I have to pass the TV. Bathroom's back here. And I see Shea Stadium's baseball field, which I've watched, even though I'm a Yankees fan. My dad's an old Dodger fan. And since you know, he was the king of the home at that point, certainly as I was a little kid, he had the Mets on, even though the Mets were awful. God, you want a little history lesson. I know the Mets fans think they're getting ready to take things over now with Soto, and we'll see. But good God, I mean, you go from about after they traded Seaver, so you get to like 77, 78, 79, 80, 81, 82, right before they got Keith at 83. Wow. I mean, they were like a 100-loss team every year. They were awful. Anyway, but I watched them play a lot because my dad had them on, and I love baseball. And I remember watching Conner's Corner and everything. Lee Mazzilli, shout out to Lee, who I know and I love. And because I saw a baseball diamond, I determined that that was my favorite team because the Giants had already moved into the Meadowlands. So, yeah, it was just this very drab, very boring, very antiseptic turf field with that, I believe even then it was like that red circle in midfield with the carve out of the state of New Jersey. And I think it said the Meadowlands, whatever. It was just awful. And it gripped me. I'm like, oh, baseball. Oh, yeah. And I, of course, had heard about the Jets and I watched them, but really with no passing interest, just with passing interest. So I became a Jets fan, right? I was the only one on my street. Everybody else had a Giants jersey. Now, this is right around the time that Lawrence Taylor is coming up, 82, 83. And the Jets were actually pretty good, but I'm not processing it at that point. Oh, the Jets are good, and Parcells might get fired after a three-win season with the Giants his first year. I just see baseball, which is my first love, and I'm like, all right, I'm a Jets fan. So when we're playing two-hand touch in the street or when I put up my my Christmas list, I'm always asking for Jet stuff. Wesley Walker jersey, number 85, Richard Todd. I had a Gastineau jersey, and I'd wear these jerseys to church, and I'd wear them all the time. I really, one of the only kids, it was all Giant fans and some Dolphin fans and a couple of Cowboy fans, and that was it. That is how I became a Jets fan. All right. It wasn't like it was this tried and true tradition where I had no choice. I had a choice. I just foolishly went for the low-hanging fruit and processing it in the mind of an 8 or 9 year old loving baseball. Oh, that's now my football team. And here we are all these years later. Ironically, they still play at that drab stadium 2.0. Or now they play at that drab stadium that I was not, that did not seem appealing to me when I would watch the Giants. So that's pretty interesting. And it's really just been a road of basically no reward. And you guys know that this is not to like start resetting all the regurgitated nonsense like, oh, Shula, if he would have, tarped the field, the Jets, which is true. But I can't live in the past forever. Like the Jets would have gotten to and won the Super Bowl. They probably would have, but whatever. Or Gastineau's late hit in 86 when I was actually in a barber's chair getting my hair cut. And my dad was picking me up to go to our CYO basketball game. And I remember actually they had the game on as I'm getting cut. I don't even think it was a buzz cut. It was like, it was different kind of styles back then. I see the stupid penalty by Gastineau, or sorry, Boomer, the fake spike with the Dolphins when they lose their final five games in 94, or Kotite and all the other nonsense, and Belichick resigning. Like, that is so old. It is so sad. And it's really the essence of this podcast. Well, it's certainly, I didn't know it when I was going into it. It's certainly the essence of the name of the podcast, Unkillable. Now, as I transition into how I became a Jets fan, lucky for me, I as much, and if you haven't seen it, you probably should just go and Google my name and Unkillable Rant, or, you know, Tierney Crazy Jet Speech. What, you'll find it immediately on Google, on YouTube. The moniker, which I never planned on, it was just organic, intense reaction to me not accepting the fate when Rodgers got hurt. That is all about me refusing to believe that this is going to be my football fate forever. Now, very well might be, but I'm going down swinging. You guys know that. I always believe in my heart, not that I don't have football-based opinions, that, you know, the next quarterback they take, that will be the one that works out. The next head coach that they hire, that will be the one to elevate them. The next general manager that they hire, that will be the one to piece together a well-structured roster that will set the Jets up for the better part of a decade to be relevant and to play in big games and to contend for and get to a Super Bowl or two and eventually crack through and one and win one, right? So that's what I think, and that's what I'm always going to think, and I think many of you know that. But where I'm at now with these guys is that I am now of the mindset that if they do get the right quarterback, whenever that is, not that I think they're taking a quarterback in the top 10, but whenever, if they do get the right coach, general manager tandem, you know how they're going to get it? It's going to be by accident. It's not going to be so like Woody Johnson finally waking up and having some incredible revelation from within after deep soul searching and finally realizing that his way does not work anymore. He's just going to hire somebody, okay? And you know who I think that they should hire, and I'll reset that quickly again in a moment, and then I'll tell you who I think that they're really going to get, right? And kind of like the Knicks, there will be early signs of competence, all right? Eventually, I don't know if it's going to be this cycle, but eventually when they do take on this Knicks-like renaissance, because in a lot of ways, the Knicks this century, outside of the last couple of years, and really one or two years with Melo, they've been far worse, even though the Jets have a 14-year playoff drought. They have been worse than the Jets. Like, not only, you know, again, before this iteration, which is terrific, 9 straight wins. Can't wait for that OKC game, by the way, tomorrow. Nice measuring stick for the Knicks. Like, everything that they did just disintegrated. I'm going back to Larry Brown and Isaiah and Eddie Curry and Stephon Marbury and the end of the Mike D'Antoni regime and, you know, giving Carmelo, like, acquiescing too much to Carmelo, giving him too much juice. I think as he subverted the Linsanity situation, they made the trade for Carmelo, gave up all the assets, you know, Fizdale and Hornacek and Fisher and failed draft. Like, the only reason the Knicks are really good now, it's not because James Dolan finally changed necessarily. It's because James Dolan stumbled upon a good hire in Leon Rose, allowed Leon Rose, so maybe he changed a little bit in this regard, at least gave him the freedom and the latitude to try to cook a little bit without being up his behind. And after showing some, again, early signs of competence and these smaller moves, like collecting all these draft assets that Leon Rose did very well early in his Knicks tenure, it started to finally reap some big rewards here. And I think that's where you have to be with the New York Jets. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's somewhat plausible, somewhat. I mean, I want to stay on planet reality, friend, not get completely disillusioned by the prospects of an incredible quick turnaround with the right move or two, because that's probably not going to happen. Although, you know, I could engage in another pod and tell you why, with a tweak here on the D line, stop the run, one more O lineman, you know, the right coach, and cutting the penalties in half, and maybe tacking on 3, 4, 5 minutes of time of possession and not being 25th in football and being like 17th or so. Yeah, Jets could be a wild card team next year, but it's not going to happen any other way. I don't want to say luck, but it's not going to happen the conventional way. It's just not. Like, I don't think the Jets going to hire whomever, GMX, head coach Y, And they're going to sit in the war room, and they're going to have this incredibly crafted out, well-devised plan on how to trade up and get some quarterback that nobody else thinks is going to be amazing, or at least not top 10 draft worthy. And they throw a deep go route, and they connect on whomever at 8 overall, they're 7. And he's the quarterback for the next 15 years with, 3 Super Bowl appearances, 2 championships, and 9 all pros and, 396 touchdowns. I mean, does anybody think that that's going to happen? I don't think that that's going to happen. I don't. But what I do think, and what I certainly hope is going to happen, is that for once, we will be touched by the grace of God, the football gods, or at least, even if we're not graced by their goodness for once and their mercy, at least they will look the other way and ignore us and not proactively inflict pain. There's where you get lucky and everything is serendipitous. That's not happening to us. What we hope happens is, again, we stumbled upon it and then, wow. And then because it looks good early and that snowball builds velocity downhill and size as it gains velocity, Woody stays the hell out of the way. That's the plan. That's the hope. I think that's what it's got to be. I think where I'm at, and again, this goes back to, as I started to say before, the name of the podcast. I just refuse to wake up and think that the Jets will never be good. I'm not wired that way. Now, I very might be wired like a sucker. I might be guilty of that. Chump, very possible. But, I'm just not going to consent now willingly to a lifetime of, we're the Jets. We're never going to figure it out. No, because I have seen, before they became a well-functioning organization, like you, I have seen the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. They didn't win it, but I've seen them at the 2008 World Series. I watched that with Longoria. They lost, but I watched it. I watched the once hapless Cardinals, who played at Sun Devil. I used to talk to Tiki about this. Sun Devil Stadium, a collegiate venue, a pro team, where they would always send the 7th or the 8th, best or whatever broadcast team to go and do the games, with 35,000 empty seats. And the seats were metal bleachers that were scorching hot because it was the desert. And I saw them in a Super Bowl with Kurt Warner. I've seen the Red Sox win multiple World Series. I've seen the Cubs win a World Series. I've seen it happen. All right. So I believe in optimism. I also believe in understanding where we are. And unless Woody sells the team, it's just, which he's not, and he hasn't done anything illegal or so unbecoming, an email trail of sexism or misogyny or racism like some other owners in the past. I think Woody's a good guy. I've said that. And I think he wants to win and know how. All right. So they're not going to strip the Jets from him. And I've taken calls on the fan for many of you. Oh, the NFL's got to intervene. On what? On the counter that he's not good? What are they going to do? Woody, it's Roger. You need to do X, Y, and Z. No, they look at the money. And the Jets are still pumping out a massive revenue stream. So they're not going to get saved by anybody associated with the NFL. They've got to save themselves. And I think the way they get saved is by stumbling upon it. Honestly, that's what I think is going to happen. Now, I want Mike Vrabel. I don't think Mike Vrabel wants us. Why would he? Right? I think if the Patriots don't fire Mayo, I'm not close enough to know. I think that Kraft is very tempted to do that. I don't think he will. I'll go on the record. Based more on extrapolating and piecing things together, I don't know, full disclosure. I think Mayo gets one more year. The one guy that could tempt that patience would be somebody who won Super Bowls with Kraft and somebody who is in the Ring of Honor. Now, why was Vrabel fired from the Titans? Well, it got a little stale at the end, but part of the impetus behind his ouster was he really pissed off ownership during a Tennessee Titans bye week when he went to get inducted in the Ring of Honor and sat in Kraft's box. And, you know, okay, you want to tell me it's a little petty on the part of the Titans? I guess I can understand that to an extent. But I own, like, if I own the Titans and my head coach is sitting wearing a Patriots hoodie in the Patriots box, even knowing what he did with the Patriots, wouldn't sit too well with me. And now if he's winning, I look the other way. If he's not, and maybe he's getting a little too big for his britches around the building, I can see why that might compel me to flex a little bit and move on. All right. So I don't think the Patriots will fire Mayo, which means I still think that he's in play for the Jets, but, and I think that the Jets really want him. I just don't think he's going to want them. You know, my fear is leverage play. He's going to look for the power stick, which I don't think Woody will concede fully, at least not to persuade him to take it. All right. So now I think you move on to some other options. I think Gruden's going to be in play. I'm okay with that. I want no part of Ron Rivera. I respect the hell out of him. A cancer survivor, like a man's man, a leader, a former player. He's won, but that's just not the move. To me, that feels like a 2015 move, not 2025. That's nothing that excites me. I would rather have Aaron Glenn. I would rather tap into the unknown of Aaron Glenn more so than the averageness of Ron Rivera. That's what Ron is at this point. He's the depreciating asset. He's not getting better. He's getting worse. He's getting less and less appealing as the years go by, where Aaron, at least from a coaching perspective, is ascending. So, and then the other thing, and this is going to be out there until it's not, Rex. Okay. Now, the Jets, he'd love it to be the New York Rexes. He'll make it the New York Rexes if he gets the job, which I don't think he will. I think the only way that Rex Ryan gets the job, because I do think it's quite telling, he has not had an interview yet, all right? Ron Rivera's interviewed. They spoke to Thomas Dimitroff of the Falcons, some other personnel, Robinson, formerly of the Titans, which is why, you know, I'm still holding out hope for a Vrabel-Robinson union or a Dimitroff. Vrabel union or a Dimitroff Gruden union, something of like that, or even Robinson Gruden, I guess. But Rex to me is the card that Woody Johnson pulls to shut everybody up if everything else fails, throws you a bone. It is a PR Hail Mary to silence you. And the crazy thing is, I think it's going to actually work. For many of you, I don't want Rex Ryan. I love the guy. It's over. I'd rather have Ron Rivera than Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan is not a modern hire. He's just not. Here's a question for everybody. How long has he been in the ESPN studios? I don't know, 7 years, something like that. He's been available for 7 years. He's been espousing on a massive platform. Not just digital, you know, linear, every, you name it, podcast with Ryan Clark. Rex is everywhere telling everybody that he wants the job. And, you know, he wanted the Dallas job, didn't get a sniff. Like he wanted to be the DC. So the way Rex is, I don't begrudge him for selling himself. Hell, if you don't sell yourself, who is? But the fact that he was there for 70% of a decade and nobody seriously came calling, what does it tell you? Now, it doesn't tell you that he couldn't have success. Anything could happen if he was brought in here by the Jets and quarterback issue was resolved and he had, you know, the right OC and the right GM. I mean, yeah, there's always a situation where even a subpar coach can succeed, right? Because Rex did succeed the first couple of years, and I believe Rex is a subpar coach. You know why? Because his record tells me that that's precisely what he is. What is he, 61 and 66? You know, and once the Mangini roster began to wear out through the natural attrition of the NFL, Rex and his GMs, to be fair to Rex, they were not able to put together a winning product for five or 6 years? You know, Rex didn't have a winning season, didn't go to the playoffs. Who the hell wants that? Why? Because the first press conference is going to be must watch? I got news for you. Like, I think the people who are shouting for Rex, I'm not saying that there are no Jet fans. I think that Joe would be okay. Beningo would want him and some others. I think the majority of people clamoring for Rex are people who work in New York or cover the Jets on a national basis that just think it would be fun because it would enhance the coverage of the Jets, but not necessarily make the Jets better. So that's really what I think Rex is. And again, I'm not mad at him for trying to put himself in the middle. He is playing, which is actually a pretty smart tactical move. He's playing to the vulnerability and the desperation of an owner who is lost, who has got zero juice in the court of public opinion. I don't know a single Jets fan who supports Woody Johnson. I don't know one. And again, I want to be clear. I'm separating Woody, the person, who I do like and I met. He's a nice guy. But that's not what this is about. This is about ending Sundays that are over before October. That's what this mission's about. All right? And I think if even Dolan at his absolute worst with the Knicks, and I just touched on the Knicks before, there were, and I would take calls on this over the years. Well, Ranger fans had no problem with Dolan for the most part. He kept his nose, you know, kept his beak out of the Rangers business. Rangers were pretty good. So he wasn't, and most Knicks fans are Ranger fans, and most Ranger fans are Knicks fans. So there was that, you know, division. I think the closest thing, and again, I'm not saying Ranger fans love Dolan, but they didn't loathe him the way Knicks fans certainly did for basically forever until the last couple of years, where now you forget about him. I think the Woody thing is more, I think the closest thing, and Mara's lost a lot of support, but it's not even there. I think it's probably more like Wilpon at the end of the Mets run when they lost their money. But that was even different because that was built on frustrations for not spending money. And, you know, once they lost their revenue, a big chunk of their revenue stream to Madoff, I mean, it was factually provable that they just stopped spending. Like many years, the Mets were top five in payroll. Then they were like 14th and 17th. And there was a direct correlation to the loss of money. So while Mets fans didn't want to hear it, at least there was a financial reason for it. There's you can't defend Woody on any level. Again, I can make sure that I point out, I think he's a decent man. I do. I think he's a decent person. And I always say that he does spend because there are owners who either don't spend or don't care. And he spends, and I think he cares. Now, I can't prove this. I think at this point, Woody is more motivated to be the guy, you know, hey, oh, there's Woody. Oh, Woody, thanks for saving us. Like, I'm not saying that Woody doesn't hurt after losses. He does. But I think it's different than Mara, where football pulsates through his body. And Giants fans, you might be disgusted with Mara, you know, these last X amount of years. And you might question a lot of the things he's done, rightfully so. I don't think anybody questions his desire and his love, his unquestioned passion for his team. I think a lot of people view Woody, all right, born into money, made more money off of the money that he was born into, bought the Jets, and doesn't know what to do with it. You know, inherited a pretty good roster, and then when everybody that he inherited that was good expired, he hasn't shown that he knows what he's doing. Provable. The bottom line is, and Evan, I want to pull you in for this. Tell me if you think I'm wrong here, pal. If our beloved Jets are somehow able to pull themselves out of this darkness, it's not going to be because this is amazing plan like the Niners with, you know, with Lynch and Shanahan and this incredibly innovative offensive forward-thinking vision, or the Ravens who are run as well as you can be run, or the Steelers. If it happens to the Jets, it's going to be because they got lucky and they tripped over it, and I'll take it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it feels. Like, it's like I highly doubt that they're intending on going into this and building a juggernaut like the McVays or like the 49ers, where it's like, hey, we're going to be so innovative that other teams are going to be desperate to get our guys. I don't think that's ever going to be the case. I think it's going to be like, oh, we hired this guy, and then it's like, everybody's like kind of indifferent on it, and then it works. And then it's like, oh crap, you guys knew what you were doing. We might have been naive in the first place, but you guys knew what you're doing. And then it's just, you know, and then they celebrate off it because they're like, hey, we don't have to win the fans over again because we're winning again. So
I know. So you heard me real quick before we wrap it up. I wanted to give you a different angle tonight. You heard how I became a Jets fan. How did you actually become your dad's a big Jets guy, right?
Yeah. So I was born into it. He was a big, like we were season ticket holders for a little while there. So I would go every year, you know, we got the field passes one time. It was actually when Darnold was quarterback. I should have got his autograph back then. That could have aged pretty well, you know, but,
I know.
But yeah, so, you know, we did all like the events and we go to the field passes and we go to like the behind the scenes events, like when they had Willie Colon and Ray Lucas on talking, and it was all this really cool stuff. And I feel like when you get like really like it's one thing to just like watch it every Sunday. But when you start going to events and you start like paying attention to all like the behind the scenes stuff and just doing stuff and getting like ingrained in it, that's when you just can't go away. You know, like that's where it pulls you in for life, you know, because it's like it's one thing to be like, oh, I'll root for the Jets. Oh, OK, I like them. They're winning. I'll stick with them. But when you start going to the events and you start going to games and you start going to preseason games, and you start like rooting for the third string quarterback to maybe become the guy, that's when you're getting really wrapped up in.
Did you ever think about tapping out? Did you ever have a moment where you're like, it's not worth it? I'm done. I'm not doing it. I can't. It's empty.
I feel like every time I get to that point, they hire a new coach and I have like a little modicum, you know, or semblance of like, oh crap, we might be turning this around. Like it's kind of the same situation I have with the Mets where it's like, right when it's like, ah, crap, they stink, you know. They sell the team or they hire a new GM and hire a new coach. And I'm like, hey, you know, they might not spend any money, but these guys did a lot with a little, you know, so I got to make it work. So that's kind of the situation you find yourself in. So it's even like right now, it's like the Jets have given us no hope. They've underperformed massively in a season where we thought they were going to overperform and maybe make the playoffs and maybe make a run. But then it's like, oh, but wait. You know, if in a few weeks they hire Vrabel and they hire, you know, a solid GM, then you might be like, all right, I'm back in. I want to see it, because then you can become the guy that's like, no, I was here during the shit and now I get to celebrate during the best moments, instead of being the person that's like, oh, I just came along and they were already winning. So
well, that's why I would never leave. Yeah. I totally get it. I totally agree. Now, I do think it's changed a little. Listen, I see this on social media. People call us up on the show and say, oh, I'm done. No, you're not. You're not done. You're not done. Because the first time that, like, even if you say you're done, and it's easy to say you're done now. I mean, I'm watching the games, but I'm doing it for the podcast. I mean, I'm fairly emotionless. I'm watching it with my son. Yeah. You know, my daughter watches some of the prime. She's also a Cowboys fan more than the Jets because of mommy. But when the Jets are on as a standalone game, you know, she's got some Jets gear and we get into it. So I'm not going to take away from their joy. Not that they provide any joy, but I don't think that these threats are going to be substantiated by many. I do think because I think that this is a different pod topic. It's too deep to branch into now. Yep. But I do think that it's become more complicated and tougher to be a sports fan the way we used to be now than more so than ever before. And it goes back to, this isn't necessarily the origin of it, but the NBA resting players, maintenance days, politics infiltrating sports, gambling really skewing the sensibility and how people watch and fantasy and the red zone and ticket prices and PSLs and they're Amazon and now the game's on Peacock and do I have it? How do I get it for some of the older people? You got to jump through hoops. I mean, and when you got to jump through hoops to watch a shit team, who wants to do that? But here's why. Like, can you imagine I'm incapable. Yeah. But could you imagine being a Jets fan, 35, 40, older than that, right? Or older than that, deeper, even more entrenched. And the next, you know, they hire the wrong guy. The next 3 years suck. And it's much. And then all of a sudden the Jets are in the Super Bowl and you're sitting there and you're not even enjoying it. I mean, that would be worse than 14 more like consecutive non-playoff series. Like, imagine that. Like you'll roll with them your entire life. And if you didn't see Namath win, and I didn't, you guys know that. Neither did you. Obviously, you're a kid or a young man. Like, I that would be the most empty sporting feeling that you could possibly have. So I guess the message is, just suck it up like a schmuck and hope they stumble upon success, like I said, because that seems to be the only route, man. That's it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's crazy if you're going to put yourself through all the time and effort and, you know, do all your theories on how you could improve the team and hope that the team copies what you're thinking. And at the end of the day, if they actually start winning, it'd be crazy if you were like, oh, well, I said I didn't care 5 years ago, so I'm going to stick to that and I'm going to dig my feet in that. That's makes no
way. Hey, listen, say you want to do that, do it on a different pod. There's no way that's going down on Unkillable. You know that. Everybody out there knows that. I wanted to let everybody know that Sunday we'll wrap it up. I might have to do the show with a brown bag over my head. Seriously. I think I'm going to wrap it up that way.
There just you go.
Hit the low point, the visual low point. Hey, I got to tell you, it worked for Sal. I remember at one point Sal last season, obviously 2024, but it's last season at this point, where when they were 11 and 19, what the hell were they? I think they were 11 and 19, whatever they were 11 games under 500. They were just awful. And he comes in with a brown bag and he does the show and it worked. Look, they made the playoffs. They got Juan Soto. So I'm going to have to channel a little Mets self-loathing here, even though I'm not a Mets fan. And I'll do the show on Sunday with a brown paper bag. And yeah, speaking of solutions and what we all think we could do to build out the team properly, I will have those for you as we get deeper into the offseason. We'll follow the coaching storylines, the GM coaching. I do not think Rex is getting this job unless it's a desperate Hail Mary by Woody to gain some PR equity, which would work with some of you. But listen, there's a lot going on. The Rodgers stuff, until he's gone, he's not. Most of you want him gone. I'm okay if he's back. I don't think he'll be back. I think it'll be a joint decision. But we've got a lot to hit. So really, in a lot of ways, our Super Bowl is just starting. This is where the pod's going to get real juicy as we start to formulate the future for the Jets. So I appreciate you guys, as always. Spotify, Apple, check it out. YouTube, WFAN. Check me out every day with Sal. BT and Sal on the Fan from 10 to 2. Social media, Twitter, Instagram. Have a great rest of your night. Again, happy 2025. Hey, look at it this way. It's only up from here. I'll see you guys soon.